to Around and About Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller, and first thing on the show today, I'm speaking with Jared Bigham. He's the coordinator for an initiative called Chattanooga 2.0, and this initiative is saying Chattanooga is on a risky trajectory. The city has undergone significant revitalization and job growth, an economic boom, but will that last? Will today's students get enough education to fill the jobs of the future? According to a Chattanooga 2.0 report, over 80% of jobs paying a living wage will require a degree or certificate after high school. In the future, for the vast majority of decent jobs, a high school diploma just won't cut it. 15,000 Hamilton County jobs cannot presently be filled by Hamilton County residents due to a lack of training, skills, and education. So we're going to talk about why this is the way it is and what they're hoping to do about it. Jared, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I appreciate you having me.
I usually like to open the show on a little bit more of a positive note than that, but this is some really serious stuff.
Yes, it's pretty sobering data, and when I present it to different groups and organizations, you know, I like to add the caveat that there's a tremendous amount of opportunity here just on the economic side, and when we look at the education front, that there's a vast amount of talent in Hamilton County that we could take advantage of.
And I want to emphasize something that I said just a minute ago, because I was really blown away by this. You're saying someday 80% of jobs around here that pay a living wage, we're not just talking about a great job, but just a living wage, will require some education beyond high school. Where did all this research come from? How did you find that out? Because I think that's probably a surprise to a lot of people.
Yeah, so this isn't a trend unique to the Hamilton County area. This is something we've seen increasing across the state of Tennessee, and many of the statistics we pulled came from the Department of Labor. The Chamber of Commerce has access to a lot of local statistics, and so when we talk about a living wage, that's a great point that we set the baseline at $35,000, and we viewed that as the salary that could enable someone to have, pay a mortgage or apartment rent, a car payment, insurance, and maybe some organic groceries a couple yeah. times a week. So it's like you said, it's not you're not going to get over the top wealthy from some of these jobs, but it does pay a really good wage, especially if you're coming from a background of poverty where the combined household income might be $20,000 for both parents. So this is a game changer for some graduates coming out of Hamilton County schools.
Well, let's talk about that specifically, poverty, because I think that's a huge factor in what you found out. You've said 4 out of 10 students in our county live in poverty, which presents major barriers for academic success. Less than half the children entering kindergarten are ready to learn. I mean, 4 out of 10 children in poverty, it sounds like to solve this problem, you might have to solve poverty itself, which obviously no one's come up with a solution for yet.
Right. I mean, it's definitely a variable. Right now, 43% of Hamilton County 3- and 4-year-olds are in some kind of early childhood program. And I think that should be couched in the perspective that that's a program period. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a quality program. So that could range from babysitting to rigorous academic activities. So part of what we're trying to accomplish, and especially supporting students who are coming from a background of poverty, is helping support foundational skills so that when they enter kindergarten, they're not already behind the eight ball. And it becomes this constant game of catch up year to year, trying to get students on grade level. Now, when you think about poverty and you look at it nationally, there's a great deal of research that shows that although poverty is a challenge and a barrier in many ways, if a student in poverty is on grade level by the end of third grade in literacy, 90% of those students graduate on time. So even though it is a barrier, there's hope there that if we can make sure that those skills are in place when they leave third grade, they can have some positive outcomes.
So that, of course, brings up the question, how do we do that? And that's what you've been looking at.
Correct. So the data that we gathered and compiled in the report was supposed to catalyze a conversation around the community. I mean, when people got to the end of the report, I think many folks expected to see 10 strategies would, you know, change the
world. Yeah, I read it, and that's I was looking for an action plan at the end of it.
And that's typical of reports like this. I mean, we're not the first city to commission one of these reports, and usually that is what you find at the end, 10 high-level strategies that will fix everything if people just buy into it. And we really wanted this to be a locally driven process, so that it wasn't just a top-down prescriptive initiative, that it's really not business as usual, because, you know, everyone comes in with a fix for education or a program every couple years. So we wanted to rely on community members, that which include parents, business leaders, educators especially, get feedback from them to inform the strategies moving forward that could really make a difference.
So you've left it really open-ended so far.
Yes, sir. We ended the report with a set of questions, actually, instead of solutions.
Yes.
That's part of our planning process. It's actually a 100-day planning process that started this week.
And in that process, what sort of events, how are you going to get input from people around the community?
That's a great question. So we have set up four work teams initially. We've got an early childhood team that's led by three great organizations, the Community Foundation, United Way, and Reed 20. They will be convening some content experts and other people who have an interest in early childhood. The K-12 team is led by two assistant superintendents, Carrie Randolph and Robert Sharp, who have been invested in this work for years from different perspectives. And then the post-secondary workforce team is chaired by the Chamber of Commerce President Bill Kilbride and Dr. Flora Tidings and Chancellor Steve Angle here at UTC and Chatt State, respectively, are also leading the work, the post-secondary workforce team. And then we have what I think is going to be one of the most impactful work groups. That's a faith-based work team that's led by Mr. Warren Logan, who is the president of the local Urban League. And so that group is really fired up and activated, wanting to help us with advocacy and community outreach.
And so the Urban League, that would be serving very much the African-American community here.
Correct.
And that's that's one of the things you you showed in the report, is just the great disparity when it comes to outcomes based on race. But if you are, you know, if you're an African-American kid, there's a much greater chance you're going to be in an underperforming school than if you're a white child.
Absolutely correct. So whenever I talk about these opportunities out there, I always tell people there's a big difference in opportunity and access. So some of our students just don't have access or the supports they need to get to those opportunities. Right now, an African-American student is 33 times more likely to attend one of the lowest performing schools, not just in Hamilton County, but in the state of Tennessee. So and a white student has less than 1% chance of attending one of these schools in Hamilton County. So that's definitely part of the conversation when we talk about opportunity versus access.
So what are you looking for from the community? How quickly are you looking for some things to put into practice?
So we have really what I view as two work streams going on right now. We have those four initial work teams that I mentioned that will started this week, convening their partners to come up with strategies. And while they're meeting, we also have a community engagement work stream going on where we host community events at schools and other areas to get feedback that's authentic. And we really ask this question as a driver in the conversation: what would give you confidence that 2.0 is different than previous education initiatives?
Because as you were saying, it seems like at least every few years, somebody says, we're going to fix education, and we really mean it this time.
Yeah, and so we want to take that very valuable feedback from people on the ground, educators, parents, students, and compile it. And as these work teams are meeting, give them this feedback to help inform their strategies. And I think if we're cognizant of the fact there won't be a silver bullet strategy, but we can have what I call a silver buckshot strategy.
Yes.
You know, like 100 little things across the community that help culminate into the outcomes we're seeking for students. And so with that in mind, being very bold and innovative and trying to operate outside our comfort zone, I think is important.
If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Jared Bigham, the coordinator for Chattanooga 2.0, an initiative to help improve education and make sure more people in our community get education beyond high school, because as we've been saying, you're just going to need it to get a decent job in the future. And I liked what you were saying about multiple solutions. I think that's a really good point. People, I guess it's just human nature. We want a one solution. We want, here's a problem, here's the solution. We don't necessarily like to think it's so complicated. It's going to take a lot of different solutions to solve this. There is no one magic thing.
Correct. And also when we have timelines in mind, I mean, this work is generational work. I mean, if we're talking about starting with a cohort of students, 3- and 4-year-olds in early childhood, and supporting them through to a job, I mean, this is, some people don't have the stomach for these long-term initiatives that it will take to really make a difference and sustain some of the change we want. But also, I think it's very important to have some short wins and do some things that are within our power and can act nimbly in response to the business community. So there's examples of that going on right now as a result of these conversations that have started, where people say, you know what, I don't need to wait 3 years on some funding or resource. I know something I can do tomorrow to help support these students.
What are people doing?
So, well, one of the best examples for this is industry supporting this this opportunity. I went to some of the auto industry folks and said, you know, what are you looking for in some of these entry-level employees coming this summer of 2016? Because there's going to be hundreds of positions open, but they have a hard time filling them with local talent. So they gave me a one-page list of, here's the job affinity traits we're looking for. I carried it over to the to Chat State, to the TCAT Center, and Dr. Jim Barrett and his staff took that and created a 35-hour program that is now implemented in 8 high schools across Hamilton County that students participate in free of charge through Tennessee Promise and dual enrollment. And when they graduate, these students who are participating in the program not only have a diploma, but they will have an industry certification that says they've got just a little bit more technical training, the soft skills necessary to put them at the front of the hiring line for these jobs in the auto industry this summer. So it's being responsive as a business community, and then also nimble in post-secondary and within the K-12 system to help create programs, that what I call pop-up programs, to meet industry needs.
That's Jared Bigham. Thank you so much for speaking with us. Your website is chat2.org, C-H-A-T-T, and then the number 2.org. Thank you a lot. I mean, the report on there, I think if you care at all about the future of this community, is worth a read. It's about 40 pages, isn't it?
41 pages. It's kind of data heavy, but there's also some very personal student narratives in there that are eye-opening of what's going on in K-12.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.